Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington. Ahead, we hear from an eyewitness to a violent crush of migrants in Europe. Our correspondent in Germany speaks about changes towards the migrants.
At the Munich Central Station, people were applauding, cheering the trains as they were coming in. You don't see that anymore.
We learn about a woman who was there during the Burkina Faso coup. An analyst considers the political picture in Libya. And something new, a holographic Whitney Houston concert. It's here on The Voice of America. There has been a buildup of migrants at the fence between Croatia and Hungary, and reporter Henry Ridgewell was there as chaos broke out, and he witnessed a very violent scene. Henry is on the line with us right now. Henry, could you please describe for us what you saw?
About lunchtime today, local time, on the Croatian-Serbian border at a town called Sir on the Serbian side, the Croatian police had stopped the migrants coming over. And as more and more migrants arrived at the border, the numbers started to build, and there really wasn't the facilities or the space to hold them. But there are a couple of lines of riot police, and as the numbers built, there was a lot of pressure from behind, a lot of pushing in the crowd. It was very tense, very frustrated and tired refugees and migrants, and the police really not knowing what to do. And as the numbers built, the pressure grew. There were a lot of people who were taken away in ambulances in the crush of the crowd. Every time the riot police tried to remove children or people from the crowd who were being crushed, another surge of migrants and refugees tried to break through that line. And eventually, step by step, the migrants pushed the police line back until after about an hour of this crush happening, the police eventually relented and let all the migrants and refugees who had been corralled into this area through into Croatia. So the border was essentially opened. So now the situation is that there are thousands of refugees and migrants in this small Croatian border village, not knowing where to go or what to do. The local authorities also unsure of how to deal with it. Just before the crush happened, I spoke to the Interior Minister of Croatia, who said each individual migrant would be dealt with, their asylum application dealt with individually in the normal way. But clearly they've been overwhelmed with the numbers and they're going to have to rethink that plan.
Well, thank you very much, Henry, for sharing that story with us.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
The flow of migrants from the Middle East, North Africa, and South Asia continues as European nations adjust their measures to control the flood. VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez is in Munich, Germany, and joins us on the line. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, Susan.
How are the various nations responding to this crisis?
Well, it all started with Germany, which, of course, the destination of choice for many of the migrants coming in. Germany imposed border controls on Sunday, and that set off a whole domino effect across Europe, Western Europe, and Eastern Europe as well. One of the flashpoints being, of course, Hungary and Serbia, the border there, Hungary sealing its border to migrants coming in from Serbia. We saw some flashes, tear gas there in the last 24 hours. Very tense situation still there. Austria also imposing border controls. It's not as easy to come through anymore. And so what that's meant is a number of bottlenecks. The big conflict right now is between Germany and other members of the European Union, as they continue to say they will not accept, or a number of them say they will not accept the quota that Germany wants, 160,000 migrants per country.
This is going to have a long-term impact on the region. Any idea what that might be?
That is a very big question that is on the minds of many people. The general attitude in Germany continues to be one of welcome. It is not, I should say, I've been here several days now, and I've noticed at the beginning the trains were arriving at the Munich Central Station. People were applauding, cheering the trains as they were coming in. You don't see that anymore. What you do continue to see are volunteers pouring out, bringing food, bringing money, giving their time to help the refugees as they come in, medical staff on hand at the station to provide them with whatever medical care they might need as they come in. But the city officials and members of the public, I've been talking to people on the streets, I've been doing interviews, and while people say they do want to help and that Germany feels an obligation to help these people, there are questions coming up in the minds of many people, about how Germany will absorb them. Will there be enough jobs for everyone? You know, Germany is Western Europe's richest country, and it has the highest GDP, a pretty low unemployment rate, less than 5%, but still there are unemployed people in this country, and that is causing concern among people who wonder, will Germany actually be able to integrate them? There is the question of demographics, with the birth rate low, and there are critics of immigration in this country, mainly in the far right, who are raising questions about what the face of Germany will look like. Germany is still in the process of transforming into a multicultural society. You know, that process began in the 1950s when it started to bring in guest workers, mainly from Turkey. But nonetheless, there are some concerns about what it will mean for Germany demographically.
Joining me here in the studio is reporter Andrew Palchewski with a look at what is being said today in social media. Andrew, what do you have to share?
Well, a lot of people are talking about an ongoing crisis in Burkina Faso. The president and prime minister have been arrested by the military, and the military's taken over in that country. So a lot of people wondering what's going to come of that, the instability there, a lot of questions being asked on social media. Today here in the U.S. is Constitution Day. It is the 228th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution. And I thought this was interesting because hashtag Constitution Day is trending worldwide in addition to the U.S. A lot of people, politicians especially, celebrating the document, saying what a great step for democracy it was 228 years ago when we ratified the Constitution for the world as a beacon of democracy. One thing I thought was interesting, a lot of people saying, oh, well, I love the Second Amendment and I love, you know, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, and the Bill of Rights, which is all the, you know, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution wasn't ratified until December 15th, 1791. So they still got a little bit of time before they can celebrate those,
yeah.
But at least celebrating the tenets of our government. And then My Secret Service is also trending, My Secret Service name. Last night at the Republican debate here in the U.S., they asked each of the candidates, what would your Secret Service name be? Because they traditionally give the president a nickname as kind of the Secret Service code name. So people are posting a lot of things online, some nice things saying, oh, mine would be, you know, sweetheart or friendly. And other people saying mine would be argument or, you know, rude or whatever. It's, you know, these kind of names that are adjectives that describe them. And the Washington Post actually has a generator where you can put your name in and it'll tell you what your Secret Service name would be. So I put mine in and said it was Aerodactyl. I don't know exactly what that is, but it sounds very, you know, forceful and exciting. So
sounds like a dinosaur.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay, well, thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
NASA astronaut Scott Kelly and Russian cosmonaut Mikhail Kornienko recently reached the halfway point of their one-year mission aboard the International Space Station. The two have been up in the space station since March and aren't scheduled to return to Earth until the spring of 2016. Typically, an ISS expedition lasts between 4 and 6 months. The one-year mission was developed so that scientists can gain an understanding of the effects of extended spaceflight on the human body. This knowledge is quite important for NASA to develop plans of sending humans deeper into space, such as on flights to and from Mars. NASA also says that the research conducted over the Year in Space mission may also benefit people here on Earth, helping doctors, for example, to better assist patients who've been confined to bed for long periods of time. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Burkina Faso's military says it has seized power in the West African country and named a general to lead a new ruling authority it is calling the National Council for Democracy. VOA's Joyce Ngoe is in the capital, Ouagadougou, and joins us on the line. Welcome, Joyce.
Thank you.
So what has your personal experience been while this coup has unfolded?
Well, it's been very interesting because yesterday evening around 6 p.m., we were just coming back from dinner when I was notified that there had been a coup. And immediately, there were a lot of motorcycles on the streets and they started blocking the road. Luckily, we were able to make it back to the hotel. But shortly after that, we started hearing gunshots.
Did you know where the gunfire was coming from?
No, at that point, I assume we came downstairs to the front desk, and we heard that the military was all over the streets because there were mobs of people just gathering all over, and people were moving towards the presidential palace.
You have been asked to stay in your hotel?
Yes, we've been asked to stay in the hotel and not go out at all. As a matter of fact, the government that just took over power has declared a curfew today, so they've asked people to really stay home, and we were asked to stay in the hotel.
Have you been in touch with the U.S. government at all, the embassy?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, the U.S. Government was the one who advised us not to fly out last night. We actually had a flight at 11 p.m. They said it was not safe to take us from the hotel to the airport, so we needed to stay another day. And then this morning, they called and said that the borders and the frontiers had been closed. And the airport had been closed, and all flights incoming and outgoing had been canceled.
Do you feel safe in your hotel room?
I absolutely feel safe. There are a lot of us, and people are just sitting down in the lobby of the hotel watching the news on France 24.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us, Joyce. I appreciate it, and you stay safe.
Thank you very much.
UN Special Envoy to Libya, Bernardino Leon, said that the two rival governments in that nation were able to overcome their differences on major outstanding issues, increasing the likelihood of signing a long-awaited agreement to form a unity government this month. International Edition's Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke with Bill Lawrence at the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy about the likelihood of bringing unity back to Libya for stability and security. Mohamed joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Mohamed.
Thank you.
Well, Mohamed, what prompted the General National Council in Tripoli to finally agree to share power with the internationally recognized government in Tobruk?
Originally, the General National Council in Tripoli asked for some amendments to the UN plan, but the Tobruk side rejected. Now, the two sides came to some sort of an agreement on most of the issues. However, Bill Lawrence warns against some last-minute disagreements.
One of the main points of agreement is who's going to be in a second state council, which will absorb a lot of the current GNC members. That's the former parliament. One of the major sticking points is the fate of the leading military commander on the Tobruk side, who is very unpopular with the Tripoli crowd, and yet he's the commander on the other side. So General Haftar's fate has been one of the major sticking points.
Under the UN plan, Libya will have a one-year unity government, a council for ministers headed by a prime minister and two deputies as the executive authority, while a House of Representatives would be the legislative body of that government.
The UN Special Envoy believes that it will be possible to reach the final agreement by the deadline of the 20th of September. Is that doable, though?
Usually, so negotiated agreements could be doable if the sides agree on the details and if the final wording of the agreement is workable. But Lawrence raised another important issue that either makes the agreement or breaks it.
This was an agreement between political parties who represent militias who they are only loosely tied to, and the fighting has been done by the militias. And so whether or not the militias agree to the political terms negotiated by their loose allies remains to be seen.
Mohamed, UNSC issued a few days ago a resolution number 2238 calling for an unconditional ceasefire. What is needed to implement such a resolution?
Actually, disarming the militias and bringing some level of law and order needs more than a United Nations Security Council resolution, as Bill Lawrence explains.
One thing that won't happen is the many tens of thousands of Libyans that have guns won't be turning them in, and they realize they needed weaponry to protect themselves in a relatively lawless society. There's increases now in Libya of kidnap for ransom, and other types of crimes, political assassinations that necessitate people to arm themselves to protect themselves. And so while it would be great to have a national unity government and a reconciliation begin, you know, until most Libyans feel safe, we are going to have sporadic clashes and will continue to have a lot of micro conflicts.
So even if an agreement is reached this month, Libya would need all sorts of security help from the international community to bring about security and a more successful transition to the country.
Well, thank you, Mohammed, for that analysis.
Thank you.
Coming up on International Edition, a quick look at U.S. business news and a new way to enjoy the talent of Whitney Houston. Top officials of the U.S. Federal Reserve this week have been debating whether or not to raise the key interest rate. Axel Merck, president of Merck Investments, says the U.S. central bank policy has distorted the economy with record low interest rates. He told VOA's Jim Randall he thinks the Fed should get out of the way and let market forces play a larger role in setting rates. He also spoke about the current state of the U.S. markets.
Think about the stock market that's been moving up and up and up over the years, and the volatility in the market has been rather low. So investors think the market isn't all that much of a risky place. And now, as we saw starting in August, volatility has spiked. And an increasing number of investors, in my view, are going to say, I didn't sign up for that. And they say, oh my God, I didn't rebalance. I didn't take chips off the table when times were good. And the reason why the Fed has such a huge influence on that is look at the junk bond yields that don't yield much, or look at Europe, for example, where something very similar is playing out, where Italy, Spain, and so forth doesn't really pay much more than Germany is paying these days. And the reason, again, is the central bank action, the printing of money, the low interest rates. And so the moment we move away from that, these trends are happening in reverse, and it doesn't just affect bankers, it does affect anybody who's investing in anything risky. And just about anything is risky, and the risky assets, in my view, are going to lose in value as we are embarking on this journey.
Axel Merck, president of Merck Investments. This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new? It's called a nanoinjector, a tiny nano device, 1/100th the size of a human hair. Brigham Young University scientists are using it to transfer genes and DNA to new cells. Nanoinjection is a process that replaces microinjection. Here's BYU's Sandra Burnett.
The microinjection needle, it is large and it can damage the cell as it actually goes in.
Due to technological advances, Burnett says the two large needles have been replaced by much smaller needles called lances.
DNA is a negatively charged molecule. And so we could put a positive charge on the lance, and DNA will actually collect on the outside of it. And then we could put that lance into a cell and reverse the charge, and it drops DNA off there.
Burnett says this new technology will transform the gene therapy industry. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grosshans.
It's been more than 3 years since the late pop diva Whitney Houston died, but now people who never got the chance to see her in concert will have the opportunity to do just that, thanks to technology. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the holographic Whitney Houston concert planned for next year.
Shauna, this is going to be a hologram of Whitney Houston that's going to be in concert. Explain that.
Okay. Well, in 2016, Whitney Houston, the hologram, will be making an appearance somewhere in the U.S. And so this will be a visual representation of Whitney in concert. So it will include this hologram singing. It'll include choreography, as it were. Whitney was not a very well-known dancer. But it will, as you say, give folks the opportunity who've never seen her before to do so. And then also give those of us who have had the opportunity to see her and loved her a chance to experience Whitney Houston as we did in concert. But then also in other ways, because they're going to expand this beyond just her performing and include other elements as well.
Now, this has got the approval of the Houston estate. This is not just something somebody cooked up. The people who are actually in charge of her estate have approved this, right?
Yes, and it's taken a couple of years. They were approached, Pat Houston and Sissy Houston, her mom, were approached with this idea a couple of years ago, but it was still very fresh, her death. And they weren't certain that it would be the best thing and that it might be a little insensitive. But now they have agreed, and so we know that 2016, a group called Hologram USA will be the ones to create this. And what I think is interesting is that they're going to do one concert in the U.S. It'll be broadcast online. And then beyond that, there'll be like a year-long residency, and then they'll take it internationally. So Whitney will be going on a world tour, if you will.
And this is not the first time that this kind of thing has been attempted, right? There was one with Snoop Dogg and Tupac, and a couple of other artists have done this too?
Absolutely. In fact, this company, Hologram USA, they've done Buddy Holly, they've done Roy Orbison, they've done Liberace, Patsy Cline. So they've done some pretty high-level celebrities in the past. And my understanding is they've done them justice, which is why the Houston estate agreed to work with this company in particular.
It doesn't look kind of like ghosty like you would imagine. It actually looks like the person is really there. It's not like you can see through them or something.
Yeah, but it's very interesting. They did one of Michael Jackson not too long ago. And again, it was, you know, fairly soon after his death. It brings up really interesting emotions because on one hand, it's exciting to see them again. But then on the other hand, you know that it's not them in real life. They're gone. And it just, you know, this is 2016 technology. What can you say?
Well, if you have any comment about this, please let Shauna know. You can hit her up on Twitter. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send a tweet to at VOA underscore music. You can listen for her show, The Soul Lounge, on our website, voanews.com.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA underline IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Russia is expanding its military support for the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, whom it has supported throughout a brutal conflict that has taken the lives of over 250,000 people. Secretary of State John Kerry called Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on September 15th, expressing the United States' concern that a Russian military buildup in Syria could further escalate the conflict, lead to a greater loss of innocent life, increase refugee flows, and risk confrontation with the anti-ISIL coalition operating in Syria. Russia claims its military support for Assad is aimed at defeating terrorists like ISIL. President Barack Obama said September 11th that Russia and the United States' common view of the ISIL threat creates a potentially converging interest. But, said President Obama, the bad news is that Russia continues to believe that Assad is somebody that is worthy of continuing support.
It has been my view and the view of the United States government that as long as Assad is there, he has alienated so much of the Syrian population that it will not be possible to arrive at a peaceful ceasefire and political settlement. And you'll continue to have this vacuum that's filled by extremists.
President Obama said, "You can't continue to double down on a strategy that's doomed to failure. If, however, the Russians are willing to work with us and the 60-nation coalition we've put together, then there's the possibility of a political settlement in which Assad would be transitioned out, and a new coalition of moderate, secular, and inclusive forces could come together and restore order in the country. That, said President Obama, is our goal."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.